We need to talk about the weight of a decision before you ever pick up a nesting box. If you are getting into meat rabbits, you are entering a world of high-stakes biology where a single mistake in your selection process can cost you hundreds of dollars in feed and months of wasted labor. Meat rabbit genetics, breeding for fast growth versus pets. The first thing you have to understand is that a rabbit is not just a rabbit. In the world of homesteading, a rabbit is a biological machine designed to convert low-quality forage into high-quality protein. But if you treat that machine like a companion, or if you buy a machine that was designed for a show table instead of a dinner table, the gears are going to grind to a halt before you even get your first litter to the processor. I have seen so many well-meaning homesteaders start with purebred New Zealands they bought from a backyard breeder who only cared about how soft the fur was or how straight the ears stood. They get them home, they feed them the best pellets, they give them fresh greens, and then they wonder why it takes 5 months for a fryer to reach 5 pounds. That isn't just a slow rabbit, that is a failure of genetics, that is a drain on your resources. And on this farm, we do not tolerate drains on our resources. Every ounce of feed that goes into a rabbit must result in a predictable, measurable gain in meat. Otherwise, you aren't homesteading, you are just running a very expensive animal rescue. We are here to talk about the grit and the math of meat production, how to look past a cute face and see the carcass quality beneath the fur. I want you to imagine two different rabbits. On one side, you have the show rabbit. It is beautiful. Its coat is pristine. Its markings are perfect according to a handbook, and it has a sweet temperament. On the other side, you have the production rabbit. It might have a ragged ear from a territorial scrap. Its fur is dense and coarse, and frankly, it doesn't care if you pet it or not. But when you put those two on a scale at 8 weeks, the production rabbit is already pushing 4.5 pounds while the show rabbit is struggling to hit 3. That difference, that 1.5 pounds, is the margin between a profitable homestead and a hobby that bleeds you dry. The old way of thinking tells you that a breed name is enough. People say, just buy a New Zealand or a Californian and you'll be fine. That is a lie. Breed is just a label. Genetics is the engine. The Farm Fresh way requires you to be a cold-blooded accountant of your rabbitry. You have to understand that the genes for a pet temperament are often at odds with the high metabolism, high growth hormones required for commercial-grade meat production. If you are breeding for cute, you are actively breeding against calories. You have to decide today which one you are feeding because you cannot maximize both. When we talk about the psychology of the breeder, we are talking about the ability to cull without emotion. In a pet-centric mindset, every kit is a life to be saved. In a production-centric mindset, every kit is a data point. If a doe has a litter of 10, but only 4 of them reach butcher weight on time, you don't keep that doe because she's a good mom. You cull her because her genetics are inefficient. You are looking for feed-to-meat conversion ratios, FCR. If you are feeding a rabbit 4 pounds of pellets to get 1 pound of meat, you are losing money. A high-density production line should be hitting closer to a 3-to-1 ratio. This requires a focus on hybrid vigor. While the pet world prizes purity, the meat world prizes results. This is why many of the best homesteaders use a terminal cross, breeding a high-growth New Zealand buck to a high-litter-size Californian doe. The resulting kits, the F1 generation, often outperform both parents because the genetic slate has been wiped clean of the inbreeding depressions found in show lines. Let's get into the granular tactics of how you actually select your breeding stock. How you separate the fast-growth meat machines from the slow-growing pets. It starts with the 8-week weigh-in. This is the most important day in your rabbitry. At exactly 56 days, every kit in the litter goes on the scale. You aren't looking for the average. You are looking for the outliers. If the litter average is 4 pounds, but you have one buck that hit 4.8, that buck is a genetic goldmine. Even if he has a spot on his nose that would disqualify him from a show, he is the one you keep. Why? Because those extra 0.8 pounds are free meat. He grew faster on the same amount of milk and pellets as his siblings. That is the fast growth gene in action. You also need to look at dressing percentage. A pet rabbit has a large head, heavy bone structure, and lots of waist weight. A meat rabbit has been bred for a small head and fine bones, meaning when you take that rabbit to the processing table, you are getting 60% of that live weight in the freezer rather than 50% or less. That 10% difference over a year of production is dozens of meals. One of the biggest pitfalls I see is keeping back the runts because they are sweet. Stop doing that. In a meat operation, a runt is a sign of a genetic or developmental bottleneck. If you breed a runt, you are literally baking slow growth into the future of your farm. You are also looking for mothering instinct, but not the way pet owners do. We don't want a doe that wants to cuddle. We want a doe that builds a perfect fur-lined nest, delivers her kits quickly, and has enough milk to keep their bellies round and white. If she fails that more than twice, she becomes a one-way trip to the crockpot. It sounds harsh, but being protective of your resources means not wasting high-protein feed on animals that don't produce. You also need to be wary of long-bodied rabbits. While they might look big, they are often bony. You want commercial-type rabbits? They should feel like a solid, heavy brick when you pick them up. If you can feel the spine too easily, that's a pet-grade frame. You want a high-arch loin where the meat is thickest. Another tactical error is ignoring the FCR during the winter months. A production rabbit has the metabolic heat to keep growing even when the temperature drops. A rabbit bred for an indoor pet environment will stall out, it will use all its calories just to stay warm, and your growth curves will flatline. You need hardy genetics. When you are buying your foundation stock, don't go to a pet store and don't go to a fancy breeder. Go to the guy who has 300 holes in a barn and doesn't know the names of his rabbits, only their ear tag numbers. Those numbers represent performance. They represent a lineage of animals that have had the pet traits scrubbed out of them by generations of selection for one thing and one thing only, yield. Imagine your freezer 6 months from now. It is full. Every package is labeled with a weight that makes you proud because you know exactly how little it cost you to produce that protein. You aren't struggling with slow-growing fryers that eat you out of house and home while they slowly crawl toward butcher weight. You have a system, a biological engine, that works for you. That is the result of choosing genetics over aesthetics. That is the farm-fresh way of ensuring your family's food security. You have moved from being a consumer to a producer, and you have done it by mastering the math of the meat pen. It changes the way you look at your animals. They aren't just pets. They are a partnership in survival. Your zero-cost task for today is simple but requires a cold eye. Go out to your rabbitry or look at the breeders you are considering. Evaluate them on a scale of 1 to 10, not on beauty but on utility. If you have an animal that is sweet but slow, identify it, mark it. Decide now that its offspring will not be kept for breeding. You are drawing a line in the sand today between your heart and your harvest. In our next session, we are going to talk about the three-bin system for managing the high nitrogen waste these meat machines produce, because on a homestead, even the waste has to work.